This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Jeremiah Love gets the carry, running left, has a hole. He's across the 10, needs a block at his own 20. Now he's down the sideline. It's a foot race across midfield. 30, 20, 10, 5. You got to be kidding me. It's a touchdown. 98 yards for Jeremiah Love. Unbelievable.
Notre Dame Radio Network, and that really started things off with a bang for the Irish in Indiana. Pretty much no-showed this game until the last little bit of garbage time that made the game look a lot closer than it was, Pearl, but it was just one of four double-digit wins for the home team. It was a whitewash through the entire weekend.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like, are these teams that won the blowouts that awesome, or was the competition that bad? I think in Notre Dame's case, the competition was not great. Indiana played it a little better towards the end, but even then, like, they were making boneheaded mistakes left and right. They seemed disorganized on offense. I'm not sure I can take away from that Notre Dame game and say we're going to see the same Notre Dame team against Georgia, but wow, I am so excited for that battle. I mean, Notre Dame, finally, like, they have so many athletes on defense. Is this going to be, like, a real contender? Because when's the last time we really thought Notre Dame was going to win a title? I don't think anyone thought they were going to beat Alabama back in the Manti Te'o year.
That was the closest.
Yeah, and even then, it felt like, oh boy, this team feels way different for Notre Dame. I'm talking, when's the last time they won a title? It was at 88 or 80, or it's been forever, right? This feels like a very different Notre Dame team.
Okay, so this is the smallest point spread of the, what are we calling this, the quarterfinals? Only a 1.5 point underdog to Georgia. We have a poll up at Maggie and Pearl right now, which is who had the worst loss of the college football playoff first round? So obviously Indiana, SMU, Clemson, and Tennessee are there. But in terms of who had the best win and who was the most impressive in their win, well, obviously you have a lot of choices. And to me, I think it's Ohio State. We've been waiting for Ohio State to put together an offensive performance like this. It feels like for at least a month and a half, maybe all season.
Yeah.
I mean, this was what we were hoping the Ohio State offense could look like. And the fact that they did it to Tennessee, right? Tennessee, an SEC at-large team who was built on their defense. You know, this is not the Hendon Hooker Tennessee. This was a Tennessee team that was defense first. And the fact they took it to them in that way, I thought, was the most encouraging thing. And it's funny because I saw Kirk Herbstreit and some others kind of wagging their finger at the media for questioning Ryan Day and sort of what was at stake for him in this game, that he could somehow be on the hot seat. And, like, I take issue with that because being 0-5 heading into this game against Michigan and also in the college football playoff with a standard that is so high like Ohio State, that was an absolutely fair conversation to be having about Ryan Day. That's not the fringe fans. They don't care if you beat the bottom dwellers in the Big Ten by 2 touchdowns. Like, the fan base doesn't care about that, Perloff. It's about winning titles. And this is a good spot right now. Ohio State looks very dangerous, but again, they're going to have to play Oregon, who's the number one seed in this bracket.
But don't you question the coaching staff's intelligence? Just seeing what you saw against Tennessee, like, why weren't they dropping back and throwing to those guys against Michigan? Like, if every single Ohio State fan knows that your strategy is terrible, like, are you going to be able to adjust to beat a really outstanding Oregon team? I'm not sure. Honestly, part of this win was an indictment to me. I'm like, oh my God, you did not throw to that monster you have on the wing and Jeremiah Smith in your biggest game of the year against Michigan. Like, are you really smart enough to make adjustments here? I am still nervous about Chip Kelly and the Ohio State offense. Now, I'm a little worried that Oregon will be rusty. I don't love this bye situation. That's a little tough. But I'm not sure if I would put them as my most dangerous team because of their road. So, I mean, they're going to play Oregon and then probably Texas. Like, that's tough. I feel like Notre Dame seems really tough coming out of that first round because that we know that bottom half is weaker and defense wins championships. And gosh, they have so many studs. Like, how many NFL players did you see on that defense? I don't know if that's a function of Indiana, but it sure seemed like Notre Dame's defense was unstoppable.
Yeah, listen, Notre Dame also looked great, but I was one of those people that didn't think that Indiana should have been in this bracket. Yeah. Now, I'm not blaming Indiana for all the blowouts that we saw. It's not Indiana's fault that SMU also no-showed. It's not Indiana's fault that Tennessee no-showed. But I did not think that Indiana should have been in this bracket. And so to me, while yes, I'll give Notre Dame some flowers here, and they have obviously it's a 1.5-point spread in this game against Georgia. Clearly, Vegas thinks that these two teams are almost dead even. So I guess I'll give them credit there. But I was not as impressed as I was with Ohio State beating Tennessee in the way they did.
Yeah, I hear you. I also think Notre Dame will have the secret weapon. Like, Riley Leonard is going to just sell out on the run. He'll run. You have a quarterback that'll run 15 times a game. It's, you know, that determines a lot. I think Georgia's quarterback will run a lot, too. So
it's gonna be their backup.
Yeah, I feel like Notre Dame is like got that formula of defense, run, where they can control the game against maybe a more talented team like Georgia. I think that's gonna play throughout this playoff.
855-212-4227. We're asking you who looked the best this weekend because listen, it was already a tight game when Ohio State went to Oregon and beat them in Autzen Stadium. Now you get the Rose Bowl, neutral field, crowd's gonna be nuts. For both sides. By the way, that was another bad loss for Tennessee, and it was a good win for Ohio State. But guys, were you surprised at how many Tennessee fans got tickets to that game? I think that shows you, again, where the Ohio State fans, I don't think, had tons and tons and tons of confidence going into this game.
I mean, they just lost to Michigan. That would make sense.
Right, but you also had a couple weeks to regroup here. You're talking about rest versus rust. I mean, look how good the rest was for Ohio State. They picked themselves back up. I mean, this is fantastic.
They didn't do anything. They just threw the ball to their best player, which they decided not to do for the second half of the season.
Well, they could have packed it in, too. I mean, that Michigan loss was really bad. You'd expect that an Ohio State team with the kind of players and you'd hope, like, pride, that they would show up, and they definitely did.
I'm not sure. I think it was all play calling. I think that was what that's the entire story of this game is that they dropped back to pass the football and they just didn't run Trevion Henderson. Once they did that, that opened up the run. So it wasn't 2nd and 9, 3rd and 8 consistently.
Yeah, totally. The game plan was good. But again, this was a Tennessee defense was really good. So you got to give everyone credit. Everyone all around deserves kudos. And I'm never going to tell a fan what to do with your tickets. You pay for those tickets. They're yours. You do what you want. But I thought it showed a little lack of confidence in Ohio State that so many Tennessee fans were able to buy their way into that game. Like, people didn't want to witness it.
Well, could you say that maybe this is like a novel thing? Tennessee hasn't been in this position for a really, really, really long time. Ohio State's like making the playoffs, no big deal for Ohio State.
But you're not getting a home game. That was it. That was your only shot.
But it doesn't feel like, again, this Ohio State, like Michigan game is way bigger than this open round playoff game. They're apples and oranges. Don't you think if they could trade that Michigan win, I guess because they're still alive for a title, but I get it. For them, this is a disappointing season so far. I think if they lose at Oregon, they're going to walk away and say, ugh, this was a bad season, right? Like that win over on Saturday, that's not proving anything, is it?
It did prove something to me.
I mean, they looked. Remember that game where they played really, really well in the Final Four against Georgia? That didn't prove anything. They basically should have beaten Georgia and gone to the title game and probably won the title game. But again, like that's not what Ryan Day is being judged on.
855-212-4227. So you can weigh in on the best win of the weekend, but also the worst loss. Let's update the poll for you. We asked who suffered the worst first-round loss of the weekend. And right now, Tennessee is leading the poll by a long shot. And I agree, because you could have squabbled with Indiana in their resume. You can look at SMU and say, oh, should the second ACC team, should they have really been in? You can even look at Clemson and say, listen, were they doing this with a little bit of smoke and mirrors?
They have three losses, so they need more smoke and mirrors. But yes, go ahead.
But Tennessee, nobody was complaining about Tennessee. No one was saying Tennessee didn't belong.
Right.
It's an SEC team who had beaten Alabama. I know they had lost to Arkansas. Like they weren't perfect, but nobody was quabbling about Tennessee. They deserve to be there. They go to the horseshoe. They got smoked.
Right, but don't you think that there's a feeling like this is not really Tennessee's year? Next year is Tennessee's year. I kind of get that vibe.
There was a lot of feelings that it wasn't Ohio State's year. So
that's true. But I think honestly, like if Tennessee had won this game, I'm not sure. I didn't see a lot of people picking them to go all the way. But next year, I mean, they are going to be a problem. That's a good coach. It's a good quarterback. I don't feel like this was, to me, was not a devastating loss for the Tennessee program. Yeah, it was a devastating loss, but big picture, I'm not so worried. Indiana, I'm very worried, big picture. Like, they're going to have to be undefeated plus to get in next year.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of trust with Indiana. But you know what? Kurt Cignetti, their head coach, is probably going to keep talking. You can't stop now. Mr. Google Me. Bringing up how you beat Coastal Carolina back in 2020.
Google him!
Now you can't stop talking. Now you've got to just be this guy.
That's the problem, because this may be a one and done, and now, you know, it's always fun until the Rappers got the gun. And Notre Dame had it and more some. More than that on Saturday. And next few years now, nobody's going to look at Indiana and say, okay, this is a win. Like, everybody's going to be playing up for Indiana now. I hope he has more James Madison transfers in the portal or something. I don't know or more Ohio quarterbacks, because he's going to need them.
Well, they might go to automatic bids, so there might not be a committee judging Indiana moving forward. Probably by 2026, with three or four Big Ten teams getting automatically. So if they end up in the top three of the standings, they'll be okay. But as when the committee is going to kill them next year, if the committee is still in place.
855-212-4227. Okay, we've got so much to get to. We have so much NFL from yesterday. How about the Cowboys holding on for a win? Does that mean Mike McCarthy is going to be coming back as the head coach? They've won four out of their last five. And we have quarterback injuries to update you on, including to some contenders that are very important to this show specifically. We got playoff scenarios for you. And of course, the M&P 500. Whose stock is up? Whose stock is down after a big weekend? Don't move.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Every Monday, we do the M&P 500. Stock up, stock down after a busy football weekend. Get us started, Maggie.
The M&P 500 on the Infinity Sports Network.
Sorry, I forget that. Always forget there's a sounder for that.
We take turns forgetting.
I'm a little nervous because you got Bogus bearing down on us. We got to be fast here. Give me a lot of attitude.
Is Bogus
easy turtleneck
resonating attitude. I love Perloff's holiday sweater. I think it's great. You can watch the show, by the way, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet, twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork, and on X at Maggie Gray.
Yeah, I have another one. Have you guys seen my penguin sweater?
No. Probably,
oh, that's my go-to. I'll wear on Christmas Eve. I'll Instagram it out. It's a lot more comfortable, but this turtleneck is killing me. It's so scratchy.
Way to take one for the team. Okay, we're starting with stock up. For me, we've been talking about it all morning. They deserve credit. The Ohio State offense is stock up for me. Chip Kelly, Ryan Day together combined to put a thumping on Tennessee. The pitchforks were out for both of these guys after the terrible game plan against Michigan. And what do they do in a frigid night with an SEC team coming into town and SEC fans in the stadium, because so many Tennessee fans bought tickets? They were awesome on offense.
Totally. Okay, I'll go quick. Stock up. Jonathan Taylor, Indianapolis Colts running back, 218 rushing yards, three touchdowns. But it wasn't just that. Have you ever seen a man carry the ball into the end zone with more security than Jonathan Taylor? Two hands, runs into the tunnel, just keeps on running. He's like, I am not going to fumble this. In a year where we're seeing more superstar running backs, and I think since 1988, you forget that guy is as talented as anyone. Thank God he finally secured the ball. It's funny because I think that mistake might have cost them that game against the Broncos and therefore the playoffs, but they could still sneak in.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor was holding that thing like it was a Fabergé egg or something. after what he did last week. All right, if we're going to go stock up, then we've got to go stock down. Stock down for the Las Vegas Raiders. You guys have lost enough that you should understand how this thing works. You had to keep losing if you were going to have a shot at one of the top two quarterbacks, which you desperately need. But no, even the Raiders can't lose correctly. They win against a Jags team that's going nowhere, and they fall, Perloff, from picking second in the draft now to picking sixth if the draft were today. This is all types of the wrong way to do this thing, and it could cost them mightily.
Yeah, I mean, here's the situation. You have to either fire your coach or say you're safe for next year, like I think the Giants probably did with Brian Daboll, because it's the Lovie Smith thing, which actually worked out great for Houston. But if your coach thinks he's going to be fired anyway, he's going to say, go out there and win one for me, and you can't tank. Terrible mistake.
Thanks, okay. Antonio Pierce. Sincerely, this Giants fan. Merry Christmas.
You're going to be one or two anyway. It's the same difference. I'm going to go stock down. My guy, Saquon Barkley's chances of getting the all-time rushing record, I think, have fallen by the wayside. He has 1,838 yards. He's got to get to 2,105. But when Jalen Hurts got hurt, the Commanders put basically 10 guys into the box, and Saquon couldn't get another yard. For the most part, the rest of the game, they're not going to get the number one seed now. I think they're going to de-emphasize him a little bit. And if you don't have Hurts, then Saquon's not going anywhere. Because Kenny Pickett, you don't have to worry about. I think Saquon Barkley, I'm sorry, that was a nice storyline, not catching Eric Dickerson.
Okay, let's do another round. Stock up. In a loss, I thought Cade Klubnik actually pointed himself very nicely here for Clemson. 26 of 43 is not so gaudy. 336 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 pick. It's not his fault that the Clemson defense couldn't stop anything that Texas was trying to do on the ground. So to me, Cade Klubnik, I thought, even more than yours. And we actually thought we were going to see some Arch Manning here. Ooh. Not really. 3 carries for 0 yards. This was not an Arch game. Arch was not the secret weapon. Ewers was very good as well, but it was really about the run game. And I thought Cade Klubnik in a loss, his stock rose in my book, the Clemson QB.
Yeah. Will he come back?
I think he's got the starting job if he does. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think he's looking at next year's draft class and being like, oh, that's not that great either. Okay, I'll do stock up, obviously. Jaden Daniels. It's not even like the late game heroics. It's the fact that he looks like a veteran. Like, what? Why is this guy playing like a rookie? I'm saying that as an Eagles fan. He gets back in the pocket and totally controls the game. He sees everything perfectly, like he's been playing NFL football for a long time. Couple mistakes, but his running ability and his late game heroics again and again and again are insane. I knew he was coming down and scoring a touchdown in that last drive against the Eagles. There was no doubt about it. It got a little dicey at the end, but wow, he's super fun to watch.
It's unreal how he's scoring these late touchdowns. All right, quickly here, another stock down. 49ers eliminated from the playoffs, and now this will be the offseason of the Brock Purdy contract negotiation. Stock down for the 49ers, a terrible season that just couldn't find the bottom on this season, but they were mathematically eliminated, and now they got a big decision on Purdy.
My stock down is the College Football Playoff Committee. Bye-bye. No. You just basically judge yourself in their relevance. I think you're going to be a non-thing in 2 years because you have no idea what you're doing.
There you go. Little M&P stock up, stock down. You could weigh in with yours at 855-212-4227. Bogus has headlines for us. What's up, folks?
These headlines are sponsored by PXG Golf for high-quality, high-performance golf clubs, apparel that delivers style and comfort, premium golf balls, award-winning gloves, and more. Make it a PXG holiday for the golfer in your life. Find the PXG store near you at PXG.com.
Deeper.
It's where you guys began the show. Mike McCarthy's future in Dallas. The Cowboys cooling off the Bucs on Sunday Night Football 26-24, but only after being eliminated from the playoff race earlier in the day. Jerry Jones does not sound like an owner preparing to fire his head coach.
The team is playing at that level because he's got him coached up to play at that level, even though you realize that when you're not in those playoffs, and you can't get to the big one. But he's got this team. That's as good of emotional performance, effort performance, as I've seen us have. And I don't know what to compare it to.
Cowboys have won 4 of their last 5. Last night, Cooper Rush threw for a touchdown, while Brandon Aubrey nailed 4 field goals, 2 of them from 58 yards. The defense stripped Rashad White with less than 2 minutes to go to end the Bucs' last chance. Now, Tampa's loss and the Falcons' 34-7 drubbing of the Giants put Atlanta back atop the NFC South. The New York Mets are reportedly re-signing lefty starter Sean Manaea, 3 years, $75 million. The 32-year-old is coming off a breakout season with a 3.47 ERA and 184 strikeouts. This drought was weighing on most of us. Thankfully, it is finally over.
Green, left side angle, gets by Dick. Turns to a right hand, straight away to Brooks. Left side angle, near the left elbow, will try a contested 15-footer and hit it. And that should seal it at 111-103 with 75 seconds remaining.
Dylan Brooks putting the finishing touches on the Rockets' 114-110 win in Toronto. It's Houston's first win there since December 5th of 2019, the year Manny was born. Brooks scoring 27.
Wow.
22 from Jalen Green.
I was saying we have a joke that Manny doesn't, well, it's not really a joke. Manny doesn't know anything that happened before the year 2000. That's
wow!
That's when human history started for Manny Rodriguez. Can we call anything that happened before 2000 BM, before Manny? Yeah.
I've been told BM has other meaning, so I'm
for you. I don't think so. I don't think it does.
No comment on for me.
But by the way, why are we making a bigger deal of this? I mean, the Rockets just won the in-season tournament, and it's just like a random headline?
I'm sorry?
What? I'm just kidding. I was like, was this an in-season tournament?
This is actually the Intercontinental Bowl.
I was like, why, they won it in Canada? Why is Bogus doing an NBA highlight if it's not the in-season tournament?
Well, you don't win in Toronto for 5 long years. Yeah. You get nothing. The Orlando Magic, meanwhile, don't currently have any Wagners. Franz was already out with an oblique injury. Now Mo suffered a season-ending torn ACL over the weekend. And hockey last night, the Oilers staying hot 3-1 over Ottawa. Edmonton's won 3 straight, 11-13. The Capitals beat the Kings 3-1 to retake the top spot in the Eastern Conference. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, what about the big news of the weekend about Tiger's son, Charlie?
No.
Chuck. No Chuck for you?
No Chuck for me.
You're not doing this? It's not even like he's a nepo baby. He's earning this.
He got a hole in one.
He hit a hole in
one. We all could do that.
Oh, okay.
How many have you hit?
I haven't tried yet.
Conscientious objector.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't fire me. I quit. Good attitude. Yeah. Charlie Woods hit a hole in one. He's 14 years old. How about that? All right. So Harold Reynolds is going to join us next.
Girl at a golf course in high school.
Okay.
Wait for that drop.
Thank you. Harold Reynolds is going to join us next to remember the larger-than-life figure, the Hall of Famer, Ricky Henderson. We'll do that next. And, of course, more football on the way. Don't move. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We'll get back to the football in just a moment, both college and pro. But, Perloff, I don't know about you. I was stopped in my tracks over the weekend when we learned the sad news that Ricky Henderson had passed away. The Hall of Famer was coming up on his 66th birthday. He's born on Christmas, Ricky Henderson. And I don't know about you, but for when I was growing up, so I'm a child of the 80s, Ricky Henderson, Bo Jackson, there were just a couple guys who were just so larger than life. Oh, and I'm growing up in the middle of upstate New York. This isn't like now when you can watch every baseball game at the click of a button. Ricky just transcended the sport in a way that just was extremely impactful on my life. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, he was like a superhero. Like that's why I was surprised when he passed. I always thought of him as larger than life. You know, he was an AL guy for most of my childhood. So he was not really as I went to a million Phillies games. I don't think I ever seen him live, but it must have been awesome.
So let's get the thoughts of someone who played against Ricky, someone who grew up in the same sort of area of the country, kind of, as Ricky Henderson, and has an all-time great story about the Hall of Famer. And that's Harold Reynolds, who we absolutely love on MLB Network. Hot Stove is happening throughout the offseason, and we'll get to that in a moment. But Harold, I'm sorry for your loss. I can imagine this has been a tough time losing Ricky Henderson, just 65 years old.
Yeah, it's been real difficult. It really hit home probably in our generation because, like you guys so well said, you thought of him like Superman. You know, he never he was a guy that was always in shape. I just saw him a couple months ago. He looked great, looked like he could still play. And he was always that mythical figure. Like, you know, you hear about Shoeless Joe Jackson coming back and playing, barnstorming all over the place. And I always thought, Ricky's going to come back and play with these new stolen base rules and go make some money. You know, that was just the way you thought of Ricky.
Harold, where do you put Ricky in terms of most talented baseball players you've ever seen?
I've been asked that a lot and been thinking about it a lot, but I've said this for years, that pound for pound, man for man, Ricky's the best player I ever saw. I mean, he was amazing. He could do anything. Hit, run, throw, steal bases, just consistent, did everything. So you put him right there with a game changer with the best that ever played. And I played with Griffey. I played with Cal Ripken. I played with some great players, but I think talent-wise, nobody's more talented than Ricky.
Harold Reynolds is joining us to remember the life of Ricky Henderson. Now, I said you guys kind of grew up in a similar kind of geographic area. Of course, Harold, famously, you're an Oregon through and through. No, you're a massive Ducks fan also, so we'll get to that in a minute. Ricky growing up and going to high school in Oakland, how aware of you with each other, even going back to high school days?
You know, you go back, for me, I got to know who Ricky was when he was playing for the Oakland A's. He had already been in the big leagues, like his first or second year. And I had transferred from San Diego State to Kenyatta College in Redwood City, which is right in the Bay Area, right outside. And the Oakland A's would play day games on TV all the time. And so I got to watch Dwayne Murphy take pitches for this young Ricky Henderson to steal bases. So I saw him then. My dad actually lived in Oakland, and I would have gone to Oakland Tech had we stayed in Oakland area, so I'd have gone to that high school too. So I had a little bit of a familiarity with Ricky, but not until I got to the big leagues and got a chance to really talk to him and see him in person did I see the enormity. Ricky broke on the scene for me as a football player. That's when I first started hearing about him, and I remember talking with him a lot about it. And he was in that era where USC had all the Heisman Trophy running tailbacks. He was supposed to be the next in line to win a tailback. That was how good he was.
Wow. Well, you know, we know that Ricky is the third person Ricky, bigger than life, bombastic. Is he like that just when you're one-on-one with him? Is he as humorous and sort of, you know, I don't want to say like, full of himself, but that was sort of what Ricky was. Was there a different Ricky?
No, and it's funny. He didn't come off arrogant. It was just who he was. You know, he talked in the third person. If you're playing cards with him, Ricky got a sweet hand. Ricky gonna smoke somebody right now. You know, that was just him. That was the way he just grew up. So it wasn't an arrogance. It was more of a I wouldn't even say a bravado. It was just his personality. One of my favorite stories was he's playing in Oakland. He's off to a little bit of a slow start, and reporters are at his locker, and he's locking right next to Mike Gallego. And Gallego is a second baseman, slapping the ball around, not a big power hitter. And somebody says, "Hey, Ricky, you're just not playing like you're capable of." And he says, "If they're going to pay me like Mike Gallego, I'm going to play like Mike Gallego." And Mike's right there next to him.
Oh, man. Harold Reynolds is joining us, of course. Harold Reynolds, the former All-Star. Now you can catch him on MLB Network, does a fantastic job with Matt Vasgersian. Weekdays, 9 a.m. on MLB Network's Hot Stove, and that's going to be all through the offseason, and the Hot Stove certainly churning. We'll get to that. But Harold, you have another story. I know that Perloff has told me that you once told on the Dan Patrick Show, but it's so good. I'm wondering if you would tell our audience about the time when you got a special phone call from Ricky Henderson.
Yeah, I mean, this is a famous story. Even before I get to that, just, you know, him speaking in the third person is really what it's all about. And I remember being in the All-Star game in 1987, and this is the same year I win the stolen base title. And Tom Treblehorn's our manager, and he's going through the signs. And Kirby Puckett, we had so many personalities, man. It was unbelievable. And Puck was like, "Man, we don't need no signs. It's an All-Star game." And everybody's like, "Where's Ricky?" And he's taking a nap before the game. Chill, Ricky was. All-Star game, he's in the back taking a nap. So that was the first intro into the personality of Ricky. So that season he'd gotten injured, and he'd got hurt like in May or something like that. So he wasn't up to par in the stolen bases, but he already had 30 in May. And he didn't come back for a lot later in the season. And so it comes down to the last day of the year, and Ricky Henderson's got like, I don't know, 40-something I think he finished with. But Willie Wilson has 59. I have 59. We're playing against the Texas Rangers. I'm with Seattle. And Kansas City's at home against whoever they're playing. So we're in the same time zone. And so our game started in the afternoon, and I steal a base. Willie Wilson doesn't. I win the stolen base title, and I'm digging myself. I'm like, 60 stolen bases, and I won a stolen base title. And it was the first, like, offensive title that anybody won for the Mariners. This is before Griffey comes along and everybody else. I won the first, like, title, and this is real cool. So we celebrate on the plane. We're flying back. We get back to Seattle. Phone rings the next morning, and it's Ricky. Hello? Henderson here. I said, hey, what up, Rick? How you doing? I know he's calling to congratulate me. Has to be. And he goes, 60 stolen bases? You ought to be ashamed. Ricky has 60 at the All-Star break. Click. Hung up the phone. And that was the end of the conversation. And so years later, he goes into the Hall of Fame, and I'm looking at it right now because I'm in my office. But he signs a poster and it says, to Harold, you ain't no SB champ. Ricky Henderson, Hall of Fame 2009. So it was pretty cool. So I treasure that. But that kind of bonded us through the years, moving forward the rest of my career with that simple phone call.
Harold, he came in the league in 1979. Tell me, what would his career play out like if Ricky Henderson was 21 years old and coming into the Major League Baseball right now?
He'd be, you're talking about $700 million. I mean, how he does everything you would ask. They love the analytics, love all the things he does. He walked on base, had power, stole bases. I mean, if you look at the things that he did, impacted the ball, and he actually played good defense, which isn't accounted for a whole lot today when you start looking at the numbers. But if the guys today are making $300, $400, $500 million, Ricky's in that category. But I think if you look at Juan Soto and his impact and what they talk about in the lineup, there's nobody more impactful than Ricky Henderson. And I think you look at that, he's a $700 million player.
Do you think he could have been more of a power hitter if he wanted to be?
No doubt. But the game was different. It didn't call for him to hit home runs. You know what I mean? He still hit 20-some. If you look at the percentage of guys that were hitting 20, 25, 30 home runs, it wasn't very many, and he's in that category. So if they'd have said, Ricky, we want you to hit third in the lineup, hit 30 or 40, there's no doubt in my mind he could have done that.
Harold, can't tell you how much we appreciate this. We know it's been a tough couple days, obviously, losing someone like Ricky Henderson, but we appreciate you sharing your memories of him. And yeah, there's really nobody like him. I know that's kind of cliche to say, but he was one of a kind, and he will certainly be missed. And also, Harold, congrats to your Oregon Ducks. We are really looking forward to them playing Ohio State in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm heading out to the Rose Bowl, and Dan Lanning's been fantastic. The team is fun to watch, and they're prepared. And here we go, Ohio State game two. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But I appreciate you guys taking the time to honor Ricky, special person. We had Don Mattingly on Saturday, and Donnie said he's the best player he ever played with. So just think about and saw. So how about that? All the people Donnie's been around. So pretty impressive stuff. But thank you guys for having me. Go Ducks.
We'll go Ducks.
Appreciate you, Harold.
Thank you, Harold.
Thank you. You can watch Harold Reynolds and Matt Vasgersian weekdays 9 a.m. on MLB Network's Hot Stove throughout the offseason. It's a great show. They do a great job. They've got such good chemistry, Harold and Matt, and they're just the best. The thing about Ricky Henderson, it's like hard to get across, I think, sometimes just how, again, not just like larger than life, but Ricky Henderson was in the category of any story you heard about Ricky Henderson you thought could be true.
Yeah.
So obviously the famous story about Ricky getting a $1 million bonus from the Oakland A's, and then like a couple months go by and they're like, man, Ricky never cashed the check. They go to Ricky and he had it framed. right? He framed the check before he cashed it because growing up, he always wanted to be a millionaire, and getting a check for $1 million to him was, you know, to anybody, was so cool that he put it in a frame. So that's a true story.
Right. I was just saying, don't tell me that's not true. I've believed that was true my whole life.
Well, that story is true, but the story that's unfortunately not true is also a great Ricky Henderson story. But again, it's not true, where he was teammates with John Olerud, who famously wore a helmet when he was playing first base. And then years later, they reconnect. And Ricky Henderson saying, oh, I had a teammate who wore a helmet playing first. And John Olerud goes, Ricky, that was me. But unfortunately, that story is not true. And I wish it was, because it's so funny.
Who dispelled it?
John Olerud.
Oh. Ah, bummer.
Yeah. But Harold, that's an awesome story. Harold winning this season home stolen base title and Ricky Henderson calling him up to say, I'm ashamed. You should be ashamed of yourself. 60.
You want to have a good time.
Ricky Henderson.
Yeah. Pull up Ricky Henderson's stats on Baseball Reference. First of all, dude played forever.
Forever.
He led the league in stolen bases with 66 in 1998 at age 39 years old. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Towards the end, even when he was journeyman, he was ripped and talented. Like, he was a very, very special athlete. Who did you compare? Oh, Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, there are a few athletes of all time who just move differently. Bo Jackson, Ricky Henderson, Usain Bolt, Deion Sanders. Like, he was actually like faster than anyone I remember. I guess there have been other fast players, but can you remember anybody? Could you think of any baseball player faster than Ricky Henderson?
I mean, maybe someone like Harold Runn. I don't know, but for Ricky, it was just something about how captivating he was, and I think Harold Reynolds put it perfectly, where he would refer to himself in the third person and all of that, and it became very funny. But you never got a sense that he was being super arrogant about it. It was just him. And, he had, like, a bravado and a belief in himself and, Ricky's going to do this, Ricky's going to do that. But it came across as endearing, I think, for a lot of people. Not,
oh, yeah.
Like, no one, I don't think, was rooting against Ricky.
No, I don't think, I've never heard of a fan who had a major problem with Ricky Henderson. I guess.
Which is a hard
thing to
pull
off. Actually, I do remember there were some. And Harold mentioned there were definitely some contract issues. There were definitely some situations where he was not happy with what, I can't even remember, because there were so many teams where a team wasn't paying him enough. That was definitely a thing.
No doubt.
I don't think any fans fault him for that.
But, you know, we talk about some guys who are like, you know, who have a lot of bravado, who are very polarizing. And maybe it's the age that I was and just how starstruck I think we were by Ricky, but I don't remember him being polarizing in that way. It was almost like everyone was kind of in on the joke, if you will, of like, this is just who Ricky is, and this is just the way that he talks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you guys, like, for EJ and Manny, you guys are younger, Ricky Henderson, are we getting across like just how much he meant? Is also it was such a different time media wise. We are not watching out-of-market games like you are today. And so for Ricky to cut through to every place in America, it just seemed like such a bigger deal.
Ricky is like he's an icon. So, like, even though, you know, I mean, I actually watched him because he was playing on the Mets as a 40-year-old.
That's true.
First season was good. Second season, you know, he went Ricky Henderson, and that didn't go so well.
Yeah.
But, like, he's one of those guys that, like, as soon as you see him, like, who's that? And then your dad or your uncle or whoever has a zillion Ricky Henderson stories. You're like, oh, my God, this guy's like a folk hero,
yeah.
You know? And that's what made it, you know, kind of unbelievable when you saw that he passed, because it's just like, there's no way this guy, like, Ricky Henderson. But in some ways, like, it's sad, but, like, the special, special people, like, a lot of times we don't have them that long. And that, to me, he's like, in that same class, but unbelievable time. I was obsessed on this Baseball Reference page on Saturday when the news passed, just watch reading all of these stats. And I was right. He's 100% a $700 million player today. No question.
Oh, that's the thing, too. He could have probably hit 50 homers in a year if he wanted to. And played also, too, when he came up, the baseball parks were huge. Like, if you imagine today's Yankee Stadium or today's Philly or a place like that, he was big, too. He was not... You think of a stolen base guy, like a thin little guy running around? No, Ricky was solid.
855-212-4227. I know Ricky means a lot to a lot of people. $700 million. I love this is the baseline now. If you're an elite player, $700 million.
I think he's better than Juan Soto. I was about to say, if Juan Soto is getting 760, then give Ricky 8. especially with the stolen base rule now. They might not have been able to put that stolen base rule in if Ricky Henderson was in the league right now.
No, I mean, you got who stole 74 bases? Acuna?
Acuna, yeah.
Oh, or whatever it was. I mean, when Harold Reynolds, who just joined us, said, you know, he wasn't sure that Ricky would come back with the new stolen base rules. You only have so many pickoff attempts, and Ricky would be unstoppable if he played now.
Yeah, he might have 200 stolen bases if he played in today's baseball with these rules.
Right, but he would take that exit velocity home run stuff as a challenge too, and he'd be swinging for the fences left and right. It would have been awesome. And I think he would have been a real winning player too, because he didn't always win in his career. You know, he definitely won a lot, but man, he'd be amazing today.
855-212-4227. Also got a poll question up there for you at Maggie and Pearl. Who had the worst loss of the college football playoff first round? Right now, Tennessee, air quotes, winning this. 53% over Clemson, SMU, and Indiana. Tennessee is my pick. You are the SEC at-large bid. Everyone's supposed to bow down to the SEC, the creme de la creme conference, and they went to the horseshoe and got toasted.
Yeah, but why? I understand it's bad for the SEC, but why is it bad for... it is bad for Tennessee because they got blown out. It doesn't feel like a devastating program loss to me. Like, are they in any worse shape now because they got blown out here?
No, I think it's more about the fact that everyone was dunking on the committee when Indiana and SMU got beat so badly. It's like, look, if these teams don't deserve to be here. The committee had no idea what they were doing, no idea what they were talking about. Well, Tennessee was an at-large SEC team, and they lost just as badly as the Indianas and the SMUs.
But they played basically an NFL team roster-wise, and they were at the horseshoe. I don't know. I just didn't come away. It was a ball game at halftime. It wasn't like the Indiana Notre Dame game. I never felt like that was a ball game. I really kind of never. Obviously, the SMU game was not a ball game because of all those pick sixes.
Yeah,
but. Tennessee, it was 21-10 right at half, and like they felt like, okay, Nico's settled in, he's going to feel, then like Ohio State's offense just came at him in the second half. I was shocked by how good Ohio State, weren't you surprised that Ohio State could do that?
Yes.
Like Travion Henderson's good? Oh, I forgot about that. Because he's been, it's not even him. That whole run offense has been terrible the last month.
855-212-4227. Doug is in Maryland, wants to share a memory of Ricky Henderson. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. First-time caller, long-time listener. I remember distinctly. I was at Frostburg State, and I was walking. To the baseball card shop on May 2nd, and I just remember the night before, whenever he broke the all-time stolen base record. The same day, Nolan Ryan pitched his fifth no-hitter. Mm. You guys remember that?
That's crazy. I did not remember that was the same time.
Yeah, it was the same day, so SportsCenter was kind of, you know, who do we give the most attention to? Because both records are so significant. I was devastated Saturday night when I found out. I mean, I took my grandson and both of my grandsons to Sky Zone, where they, you know, jump around with this trampoline, and I came out and heard the news, and I was just devastated because Ricky's one of those larger-than-life figures that you just don't. You see, he's going to die when he's like 100 years old. And when I got the news, I was floored, as well as you guys probably were. So
yeah, Doug, it was a tough one, you know. And it's funny because I don't know about for you, and thank you for the call. Ricky was like very important in my sports understanding and falling in love with sports just because of how old I am. So I'm like, you know, born in 83. So my first memories of my brother having these posters on the wall of Ricky Henderson and Marcus Allen and Bo Jackson and just these guys just cut through into our small town in a way that was very unique.
Marcus Allen got on the wall?
Marcus Allen got on the wall.
Chiefs, Raiders? What jersey you wear?
it was actually a Chiefs jersey, if I'm remembering.
Oh, I would have gone with Christian Okoye, but okay, I like it.
We'll go back through every Sports Illustrated poster my brother had on the wall in 1988.